Penguin Random House Audio presents The Confessions of Young Nero by Margaret George. Read for you by Steve West, Susan Deniker, and Catherine McEwen.
To my granddaughter, Lydia Margaret, who is, I like to believe, descended from the great warrior queen Boudica. 1. Locusta. This is not the first time I have been imprisoned, so I am hopeful that this is a sham and that the new Emperor Galba will soon need my unique services and quietly send for me, and once again I shall be treading the palace halls. I feel at home there, and why shouldn't I? I have provided my timely services for those in power for many years. By trade, I am a poisoner. There, why not say it? And not any old poisoner, but the acknowledged expert and leader in my profession. So many others want to be another Locusta, another me. So I founded an academy to pass on my knowledge and train the next generation, for Rome will always be in need of poisoners. I should lament that, should say, what a pity that Rome must descend to that. But that would be hypocritical of me. Besides, I'm not convinced that poison is not the best way to die. Think of all the other ways a person may die at the hands of Rome. Being torn by beasts in the arena, being strangled in the Tullianum prison, and most insipid of all, being ordered to open your veins and bleed yourself to death like a sacrificial animal. Bah! Give me a good poison any time. Did not Cleopatra embrace the asp and its poison, leaving her beautiful and stretched out upon her couch? I first met the late Emperor Nero when he was still a child, still Lucius Domitius Ahenobarbus, the name he was born with. I saw him at the low point in his life, when he was an abandoned child at the mercy of his uncle Caligula. Now that was someone who gave me a lively string of business. His father was dead. His mother, Agrippina, had been banished when he was not even 3 years old, and his uncle liked to toy with him. I remember he was a likable child. Well, he remained likable all his life. It was a gift, but timorous. Many things frightened him, especially loud noises and being sent for unexpectedly. Caligula had a habit of that, sending for people in the middle of the night. He once forced me to watch a nocturnal theatrical performance in the palace, featuring himself as Jupiter. Sometimes it was harmless, like the play-acting. Other times it ended with the death of the helpless person he had sent for. So Nero, let us call him that to avoid confusion, just as I call Caligula Caligula, rather than Gaius Caesar Germanicus, was precocious in recognizing the danger of the serpent in his uncle. Ah, such memories! Here in my cell I find myself returning to them, helping the hours to pass, until that moment when Galba sends for me with a task. I know he will.
2. Nero. The moon was round and full. It shone on the flat surface of the lake, which was also round, making it appear that the moon itself had expanded and enlarged itself there. It rose golden from the encircling hills, but soon was a bright white ball high above. It illuminated the wide deck of the ship. I was to sit beside my uncle and listen to him intoning praise to the goddess Diana, whose sanctuary was on the shore of the lake, and to whom the lake itself was sacred. I remember the flame of the torches that threw a flickering red light on the faces around me, in contrast to the clear bluish-white moonlight bathing the wider scene. My uncle's face looked not like a human's, but like a demon's, with a burning hue. These are all impressions, memories that swirl without being attached to anything. The reflection on the water, the torches, the thin reedy voice of my uncle, the nervous laughter around me, the chill in the air. I was only 3 years old, so it is no wonder my memories are disconnected. Then his face shoved up into mine, his silky voice saying, "What shall I do with the bitch's wealth?" More nervous laughter. His rough hands grabbed my shoulders and hauled me up, my legs dangling helplessly. "I shall sacrifice him to the goddess." He strode over to the rail and held me over the rippling water. I can still see the undulation of the reflected moonlight waiting for me. "She wants a human sacrifice. And what more worthy than this kin of mine, descendant of the divine Augustus? Only the best for Diana, and perhaps a propitiation for the lapse of Augustus, who preferred to worship her brother Apollo. There you go!" And I was flung out over the water, landing with a splash, cold, cold, and I sank, unable to swim or even cry out. Then strong hands grasped me, pulled me mercifully out of the water, and I could breathe. I was hauled onto the deck, where my uncle stood, hands on hips, laughing. "Better luck next time, eh, Cheeria? You are too soft-hearted to rescue such flotsam. Anything born of my sister can come to no good." 3. As I sat shivering next to Cheeria, I could see down the whole length of the huge boat, see the light dancing on the mosaic-covered deck, the moonlight shining on the white marble cabin. The madman who had thrown me in the water now paced up and down, laughing. Not until I was older did I hear such a laugh again, and it was from a captive hyena, whining and mewling in its cage. "Let me off, let me off. Let me off this boat," I prayed, to what god I knew not, just whatever god was listening. "Come, lad," said Cheeria, putting his huge arm around my shoulders. "You should walk, warm up." He pulled me up and marched me up and down the deck until feeling returned to my numb feet. We passed the rowers, whose heads turned as if on stalks to see us as we passed. One or two smiled. The others looked like the statues that were placed here and there on the deck. "The shore is close," said Cheeria, holding me up and pointing to it. "Soon we will be back on it." How I got back, and when I got back, I do not know. I have told you, my memories are wispy from this early age, and do not join together to make a whole. Rather, they are like pieces of cloud drifting through the sky of my mind, each portion separate and contained. But the horrible memory of the boat ride is burned into my mind. My little bed in my aunt's home, where I lived, was narrow and hard. I can feel the rough linen when I think about it, but cannot see what else is in the room. I know the place was in the country, because I heard roosters crow in the morning, and I remember gathering eggs, still warm, from a bed of straw. I also remember many kinds of butterflies and flowers on tall stalks, although I know now those were weeds. I called my aunt Butterfly, because one of her names was Lepida, which means elegant and graceful, and she was very pretty. Her hair was the reddish color of copper with a bit of dust on it, not the bright shiny copper that has just been polished. She was my father's younger sister, and told me stories about him, he who had died before I could know him, and about their ancestors. When I told her how the sun made her hair glow, she laughed and said, "Bronze hair is in our family. I can see little glints of it in yours, too.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?